Welcome to this, the fifth episode of Inside the Dressing Room, a podcast brought to you by LCFC Radio. In this edition, the man that scored the last ever goal at Filbert Street tells us what it was like to score on such a momentous day, and also what it was like as an academy graduate coming through the ranks at Beaver Drive. Matt Piper's career was cruelly cut short due to injuries, but he remains a prevalent figure in and around Leicester and will always be remembered for that famous goal against Tottenham Hotspur. Thank you very much for joining us on Inside the Dressing Room here on LCFC Radio. Firstly, how are you getting on?
I'm very well, thanks, Dan. I'm looking forward to this, mate. Bit of a podcast, Leicester City based, and I've been looking forward to it, mate.
Yeah, nice to look back at your time with the Foxes, of course, which started really when you were very young. I mean, what we normally do on this podcast is ask players the kind of story behind them signing for Leicester, but for you, obviously, coming through the academy, is it a completely different story?
Yeah, since I was 7 years old, mate. I think I often say seven. It could have been eight for those statistic people out there, but it was a good long time ago. And I played for a team called Beaumont Town, and then got spotted by Leicester. The story that not a lot of people know is I actually went Forest for two training sessions first, which would have been a disaster. I got spotted by a Nottingham Forest scout first. I went there for two sessions, hated it. And then thankfully for me, Leicester invited me to come to a training session, and then I never looked back.
What was it? Just your love for Leicester, really, that meant you hated Nottingham Forest so much?
Well, I think so, yeah. My mum was a huge Leicester fan growing up, but my dad was an Arsenal fan. So my house was split anyway. But obviously when I started training and playing for Leicester at 7, 8 years old, it was only Leicester for me then.
And when you did get in that academy then at Leicester, as you said, it was only Leicester for you. What was the feeling like for you at that point? Because I guess it's any kid's dream, isn't it, to play for your local team? And that all starts in the academy, if that's the way you come.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was different times. Obviously, it wasn't the academy system that we're all used to seeing now, with the unbelievable facilities and the superstar players in the first team. Obviously, then they were superstars to me, but, you know, Emil was a little older than me. He was making a name for himself sort of in the under-14s, 15s. I just remember turning up every week and, you know, people telling stories of, oh, the under-15s won yesterday, they beat Aston Villa 6-0. Oh, who scored the goals? Oh, Emil scored all six. It was like, wow. So he was someone really good to follow, coming through, always hearing stories about Emil. And then further on into the first team was Julian Joachim, who was playing unbelievably well for Leicester and scoring some brilliant goals. So it was good for me to have kind of guys in the first team, even though when I was so young, you know, like looking up to and thinking, I want to try and be like them one day.
Did you ever like have any conversations with them when you were that age, when you were very young and you saw, I mean, obviously no one knew what Emil Heskey was going to go on and achieve what he did in football, but obviously scoring so many goals and making such a name for himself in the under-15s, you mentioned Julian Joachim there as well. Did you ever actually get to speak to them, or were you literally just like any other kid that looked up with excitement?
Well, the thing was, at that time, so I was probably 9, 10 by then, when I was, you know, really taking it seriously at Leicester, Emil was the most quiet person you've ever seen in your life. You know, he's not the most outgoing now, but he was so quiet, and so was Julian Joachim. And at that time, I know things have changed now, but at that time, so was I. So when they were in sort of a room that I was in, I would just be sitting very quietly in the corner and just, you know, just looking up to them, but not saying anything to them, not, you know, didn't have an outgoing personality, and neither did they. The only one that I remember speaking to around about that time, a lot of Leicester fans might remember his name, was a guy called Neil Lewis, who played left back for Leicester. He was in the first team. Really good, dynamic fullback, Neil Lewis. And he gave my medals out at one of the nights where we, you know, at the end of the season when you're getting your medals, and I was always top goal scorer, so I spoke to him quite a lot throughout that time. But now I know them all really well, and they're all really nice people. You know, Emil, Julian, they give you so much of their time, you know, especially coming into the media side of things now. They've been really good for me.
I guess from a footballing sense, was there any crossover with Emil in your time at Leicester, or were you just after he'd left for Liverpool?
Well, I was Emil's boot boy.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, and I had started to become more outgoing by the time I hit 16, 17. And when I signed full-time contract for the football club, you was given two players that you had to look after with their boots. Emil was one, and the other one was Peggy Arfixhead, the goalkeeper. Mm. And I looked after them as typical pipes. Anyone that knows me now knows I'm always late for everything. So Emil and Peggy would have to wait and be getting fined from Martin O'Neill because pipes hadn't cleaned their boots in time.
Some way to make a name for yourself, that.
Yeah, I used to get butchered by all the first team because they always knew that I was going to be late. Or I was one of the only boot boys that used to send the first team players out with dirty boots just because my bus hadn't turned up on time. I had got into training. Peggy used to go nuts all the time. He used to be shouting through the corridors, "Pipes, where's my boots?" I used to run them down to him, and they still used to be filthy. But it was only good times that I can remember with them two guys.
I guess that probably isn't a thing in modern day football. I don't think anyway. I'm assuming it's not anyway, that kind of boot boy type thing. But how much experience did it give you and those players that were around you and your level and your age just to be in and amongst it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think it goes on too much anymore. I know it does at lower leagues still. I'm pretty positive it doesn't go on with the Premier League clubs anymore. But I thought it was part of my development, not just as a footballer, as a young man, you know, being around older guys, having that banter in the dressing room. You're interacting with them a lot more. You have to speak to them on a daily basis because you're doing a job for them, really. So it allows you to be closer to that group. So sometimes when you feel far away from something, so when you're 16, 17 and you're in the youth team, you feel so far away from the first team. But what brings you a little closer is that interaction with the first team players. And you start to realise, wow, these guys are not, you know, they're just normal human beings. They're having the banter. Some days they come in and they're really happy. Some days they're a little down. They're just like normal human beings. So it allows you to get a little closer to that group and gain that understanding that it's not that far away if you work hard.
And when you did eventually break through, what was that feeling like?
Well, it was unbelievable. I mean, mine was a very different kind of story of getting into the first team because the manager after Martin O'Neill was Peter Taylor. And he sort of didn't think I had the ability to make it, I don't think, in the Premier League. He came in and he gave me a new contract, but he sort of said to me at the same time that we don't really see you as one of the guys that will play for the first team at Leicester, but we know you're a talent. We want to give you a new contract, keep you close to it in the hope that, you know, one of the lower league clubs will come in and pay money for you at a point in the future. And at the time, my reserve team manager was a guy called Gary Parker, who used to play for the first team. Great, great lad, Parks is. And he really believed in my ability. And Peter Taylor got sacked. Gary Parker got the job for one game against Leeds in the League Cup. We did lose 6-0, but he started me in that game. And it was such a special moment for me because I played against the likes of Rio Ferdinand, Jonathan Woodgate, Ian Hart, Gary Kelly, Harry Kewell. So I played against a really great Leeds side and I got Leicester's man of the match, which wasn't difficult because we'd been battered 6-0. So people probably felt sorry for me that I was a young lad coming into the team at that time. But I did play well, and I did play well against the likes of Rio Ferdinand. So it gave me that belief to know that I could play at that level. And then obviously Mickey Adams and Dave Bassett came in.
Well, we have one trivia question that we ask throughout inside the dressing room to each of our guests. So just one of them, yours actually is to do with that debut against Leeds. Obviously, Leeds winning 6-0 in the end. Who scored a hat-trick for Leeds that night? I'm sure you'll remember it very, very, very well.
Yeah, I do remember it well. I think it was Mark Viduka.
It was Robbie Keane.
Oh, that's killed that then. I was just about to say that every time Viduka got the ball, it seemed to fly in the net. But actually, now you've prompted that, I do remember Robbie Keane. I mean, they had the team was such littered with talent. I mean, in my excuse, Dan, what I would say is that they had so many heroes on the pitch. All I decided to do in the end, especially when the goals started flying in, was concentrate on my own game. Yeah. And luckily, I was against the guy, he was a great player, but I was up against a guy called Ian Hart, who was technically a wonderful left-back, but he wasn't blessed with speed. Mm. So, being as my outstanding attribute was speed, every time I got the ball, and I've said this a lot, I felt like Forrest Gump that night, because I just used to kick it by him in straight lines and just run past him and cross the ball. But that's probably why I forgot who scored the hat-trick.
Yeah, it was Robbie Keane got a hat-trick, Eric Backer got one, Mark Viduka did get one, as did Harry Kewell. As you said, that team, I'll just run through it quickly now, it was Nigel Martin, Danny Mills, Rio Ferdinand, Jonathan Woodgate, Ian Hart, as you mentioned, Eric Backer, Lee Bowyer, Olivier Decore, Harry Kewell, Robbie Keane, Mark Viduka. An incredible team that obviously went on and achieved so much during that era for Leeds United. So to go out there and play against that team on your debut, did you seriously think then, wow, okay, this is Premier League now, this is the level, albeit it was in the cup, that was a Premier League team you were playing against?
Yeah, it was a good test. It was a huge test because, you know, it's that old adage, sink or swim. And I didn't know. You know, Parks had given me some indication that I might be involved. But I thought, because I'd been involved years previous under Martin O'Neill before Peter Taylor came in. But, you know, normally a first team manager will take away a squad of about 20. And three or four lads miss out. You have to sit in the stand if you've not made it onto the bench. So I think he picked a squad of about 18 to 20 that night. So I thought, all right, I might not be involved on the bench, but at least I'm involved, you know, from the start point of it. And when I turned up and he flicked the pie chart back, you know, what, an hour and a half, 2 hours before kickoff, and I seen that Piper was right wing, it was nerves, it was excitement, it was a little bit of panic. I think I went to the toilet with my mobile phone and rang my dad and my mum to tell them that I was in the team. But then there was this sort of nice feeling that someone had put that, you know, confidence in you of putting you in a team. So he shown me that he believed in me. And that really served me well. So when the whistle went, I wasn't actually that nervous. I just thought, right, get the ball, do your skills, do what you've done for the last 12 years since you've been here at Leicester, and hopefully that will be enough. And, you know, that night, it sounds strange to say because we did get battered 6-0, but I did actually play quite well.
Well, you got the man of the match, didn't you, from a Leicester point of view, so obviously it was a really good debut for you. Who was the funniest dressing room character during your time at Leicester City?
Yeah, I've already mentioned him. It would be Gary Parker. We didn't actually play in the same team together, but I was in and around it. I was in and around Martin O'Neill's first team, doing jobs in the first team dressing rooms. And Gary Parker, he wasn't just witty and funny. He was really great with the young lads, but he was the biggest prankster at the time as well. So anytime we had a new signing, you know, thinking back, I think he actually started trying to make it kind of an atmosphere like you used to hear at the old Wimbledon days, you know, the crazy gang. Mm. There were people's new suits getting set on fire, arms getting cut off, you know, for new signings. The best one that he ever did, because, listen, I like Robbie Savage, but he was a little bit of an annoying character at times, and especially for young players coming through. Parks used to Sav would come to the training ground in literally a new car nearly every week. Like, it'd either be a yellow Ferrari, a red Ferrari, a bright green Lamborghini. It would be all sorts. He definitely spent most of his money on cars. And he came in one day, and Parks used to do two things. He used to talk to the groundsman to get the sprinklers pointed straight at Robbie's new car. So the whole water system was flying into the open top roof, and by the time Savage got out to it, it'd be like a little swimming pool, which was brilliant. Or he would get Savage's keys out of Sav's pocket, go and move the car into Martin O'Neill's spot in the morning. So Martin O'Neill would come in the morning, and in the manager's spot would be this bright green Ferrari with Sav 8 on the back. And Martin O'Neill used to go nuts every morning. But the young lads loved it because Sav used to butcher us all the time and try and banter us, which was funny at times, but sometimes Sav didn't know when to stop. So when someone else got him back, it was always brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it was funny to see. A lot of people have said Gary Parker is... for this answer, basically, that have done it from this era have said that he was the funniest, but he was also very welcoming by the sounds of things that you were saying there.
Yeah, mate, he was my reserve team manager for a start, but even when he was a first team player and we were all 16, 17 year olds, he would always come into the young lads' dressing room. And at times it was difficult because he's so outgoing, he would put you on the spot in certain situations, but I used to like that because even though it felt a little bit awkward to me to put me in certain situations or get me singing in front of the whole canteen, in front of all the players when you were 16 or 17, they're the kind of, you know, scenarios that really help you grow in confidence, and he made you feel a part of the group, which was really important for all them young lads coming through.
Who was the most influential manager during your time at the club?
Yeah, this was a difficult one for me because I didn't play under Martin O'Neill, but because I was one of the younger lads that spoke quite often and was quite outgoing. At 17, 18, I got the job of looking after the first team dressing room, and then later in my time at Leicester in the youth team, I looked after the away team dressing room where you've got jobs. So I would be standing in on Martin O'Neill's talks at half-time, pre-match, after the game, because I'd need to be in there to if anyone needed anything. So I heard a lot of his, you know, half-time team talks, and it was literally, I know a lot of people say this about Martin O'Neill, but it was literally hairs on the back of your neck standing up. It was more like a Hollywood movie. Of a sports movie when he gives sort of a rousing speech and he's trying to get Walshy onside or Matt Elliott or trying to get Muzzy to score another goal. So that was amazing, but I didn't play under him. So I would have to say Mickey Adams. He was really good for me as well. We've had our times over the years when obviously Mickey is the one that sold me in the end to Sunderland when I didn't really want to go. But I have nothing but admiration for Mickey Adams and the way that he dealt with the season that we went down. And then ultimately, he had to sell players like me, and eventually Muzzy moved on. But then he brought them back up the next year. And it's just because of how influential a manager he was and how much importance he put on the fact of being a man-to-man manager, getting the best out of all the individuals.
Yeah, that, I guess, as a manager is probably one of the most important jobs, isn't it? Is making sure that you've got the players on side, and every single player is different. You'll have known that from being in professional dressing rooms, that some players need the carrot, some players need the stick.
Yeah, without doubt. And, you know, I've played, even though I had a short career, I've played under, I think the last count that I did, it was under 13 or 14 managers. So I've seen the best, I've seen mediocre managers, and then I've seen not so very good managers. And the ones that are the best, in my opinion, are the ones that don't blanket manage, is what I call it. I had a manager at Sunderland called Howard Wilkinson, and he blanket managed. So he treated everyone the same, and he tried to use the same tactics or methods of motivation for every individual. And it just didn't work. And Mickey was totally the opposite to that, Mickey Adams. And Dave Bassett was, actually. not a lot of people have got good things to say about Dave Bassett, you know, especially former players. But with his time at the club, I thought he did a really good job, because he knew that Mickey was sort of the chosen one who was brought in underneath him to begin with, and he had to try and produce that transition for Mickey to step in after we had got relegated. And I thought he did that well. But Mickey Adams is definitely one of my favourite managers.
What was your most memorable team talk? This can be before, during or after a game, and it can be either memorable for good or bad reasons.
Well, it's a mix of both, because it would be Mickey Adams again, and it was the pre-match talk that he did before the Tottenham game, the last ever one at Filbert Street. And as players, we just didn't know what the crowd was going to be like that day, because we'd already been relegated. But Mickey spoke about the fact of going out there and playing with a freedom. And he also dropped in there just to put a bit more onus on it. So it wasn't, you know, often you hear media talk about players were on holiday because there's nothing left to play for in the season, and there wasn't for us. So the speech that he gave that day was, you know, this ground has been standing for over 100 years. We do not, even though we've got relegated, we do not want to go out with a loss at this great football stadium. And it really got to me. And I know I scored the winner, but part of it was to do with that rousing speech that he gave us before the game. And if you look, Tottenham were flying that season. They were all top, I think they were top six. We had been relegated three or four games before the end of the season. So the form guide suggested that Tottenham were going to come there and absolutely hammer us. So to win that football match was huge, even though we were already relegated. And a lot of that, I think, was to do with the team talk Mickey gave before the game.
Well, I'm presuming then, Pipes, that the answer to this question, what was your most memorable game or your most memorable moment with Leicester, is the game that you're talking about.
I think so. I think it has to be. A lot of people say their debut. That's difficult for me because we got hammered 6-0. But as I say, that Mickey went into such detail. I'm pretty sure he started to name lots of the players that have graced that pitch over the years, not just Leicester players. You know, players right from back in the old legend of Leicester City, Birch's day, and even before that. And he was saying all these great players that have worn this shirt have played at this football stadium. Let's go out with a win. And the fact, you know, I look back with so much pride now, because the fact that it was a young Leicester lad that scored the last ever goal there means so much to me. So it has to go at the top of the list of my most memorable moments at Leicester.
Yeah, and that is still talked about to this day. I mean, I think is it your boots and the match ball maybe that's on display at King Power Stadium?
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll have people coming up to you from Leicester saying either they were there or they remember the fact that you scored the last ever goal at Filbert Street. For you as a personal accolade, that must mean so much, as you said, as a Leicester lad as well.
Yeah, it was huge. And the weird thing was, at the time, I didn't put that much onus on it. You know, it more the fact that it was my first goal for Leicester. That's more what I was talking about. My friends and people very close to me were talking about, wow, you scored your first ever Premier League goal, brilliant. You know, it's only years later, and probably especially for me, because I didn't have a long career because of the injuries, that you look for them moments that were really special. And you know, you talk about them a lot more. But I know it was a special thing for the fans, because, as I said, that stadium did mean a lot to the people that have gone to watch Leicester over the years. So to score the last goal there was brilliant. You know, the thing that a lot of people do talk about, there must have been, I don't know, probably 30 charity games after that final game against Tottenham, just before the stadium got demolished. And the most one that I get people coming up to me for is, you actually didn't score the last goal at Filbert Street, Pipes. It was me in a charity game. Or such a... And I'm like, mate, do me a favour.
No one's taking that accolade away from you. During your time at Leicester, who was the best player that you played with?
That's an easy one for me. Probably the easiest question, and it's Muzzy, is it? He just I don't know. He's one of them players that you play with, and sometimes you felt a little inferior when you were on the same training pitch as him, because he was doing things that you look at and you think, oh, I just can't do that. I just can't do it. And you have to concentrate more on your own game, because otherwise he did some things sometimes in training, just messing about, or in games, in really high-pressured games, some of the goals that he scored. And you think, oh my word, what am I doing trying to be a footballer when there's people like him about? So you really had to concentrate on your own game and your own attributes. But Muzzy was brilliant for that. He knew how good he was, but he always gave you his time. And he talked to you as a young player and, you know, stick to your own strengths. You know, the crossing, practice this, do that. And it was, you know, he was playing in World Cups when I was in the sort of trying to get in the team alongside of him. He played in the World Cup semi-final against Brazil. He was without doubt not just at Leicester as well, the best, the most talented footballer I think I've ever played with.
How reassuring is it to hear from someone as good as that, that tells you how to play your game and gives you advice and says do what you're good at, basically?
Yeah, I mean, the one for me, Muzzy is it, and Neil Lennon, this is what they used to do a lot. A few of the other players did as well, Tags, Matty Elliott, Walsh, yeah, but especially them two. I remember one game, it was a game at the training ground at Beaver Drive, and I think I was 17. I was either 17 or 18, and those two had just finished first team training, and the youth team had a game against, I think it was Blackburn, and it was only a friendly, but I just felt on fire that day and I was playing well. And back then I used to play in, the youth team used to play me in sort of the James Maddison position, sort of number 10, where I'd pick it up in the pocket and then try and run at the defence or create something. And after that game, Muzzy and Neil Lennon watched the whole game, and they were just sitting there in their training with the boots next to them because they'd just finished. And they came up to me and they said, mate, if you keep working hard, you will play in the Premier League. You're such a good talent, the way you take it on your back foot, the speed that you've got. So that at that point really sent me to a different level, because when you're seeing Muzzy Izzet playing World Cup semi-finals and then he's coming to watch you play and then he's saying things like that about your performance, it really lifts your confidence and takes you to a new level.
Well, from the best player you played with then to the best player that you ever played against in your career, doesn't necessarily have to be during your time at Leicester. Who's the best player you played against, do you think?
Yeah, this was a real difficult. I mean, my favourite player that's ever graced the Premier League is Dennis Bergkamp. And I was fortunate enough to play in a game that he was playing in. But I think, even though he's my favourite player, the one that I have to say is Thierry Henry, who's in my top three anyway. But when I played against him, I sort of seen the levels that you sort of have to play at to be regarded as that kind of, you know, world-class player. And unfortunately for me, I was playing right wing-back. I think it was for Sunderland. I was playing right wing-back at Highbury. And as we all know, Henry used to love to pull to the left, even though he played striker. And, you know, some of the things that he was doing. The only thing I can say is, I think he must have felt sorry for me that day, because he never tried to take me on the outside once. He sort of got the ball and he shaked to do it a few times and I'd just sprint off down the line thinking that he was going that way. And then he'd come inside and he'd do one-twos. But the sort of confidence that he had, the ability, the first touch, the skills, the step-overs, his pace, it just frightened me to death playing against him. So that's why I've got to say he's probably the best player I ever played against.
Did you ever get to have any conversations with him off the pitch at all? Or even on it during breaks in play?
No, the only one I did who was a superstar was Ashley Cole. And that was another time I was playing for Sunderland. And he is the best left-back I've ever played against. I just couldn't get round him. I tried everything. Step over, double step over, come inside, go on the outside. I nutmegged him once and went round him. And he got back and took the ball off me and ran up the pitch. And Arsenal, he created a chance for Arsenal. And as I was sort of running back, as he was running away from me when he took the ball off me, when I nutmegged him, there was a break in play just after Arsenal had missed that chance he created. And he said, "Bruv, did you just try and nutmeg me?" And I laughed and said, "Yeah, yeah." And he goes, "Listen, you're not on them levels to be able to do that. So don't ever try it again." And then he laughed and then he winked. And then he said, "Not even Ronaldo can get by me. So why do you think you can?" And I was like, "Oh, my word."
Oh, that's a great story. And like you said, I mean, what an incredible talent he was. And I guess as a player, when he says something like that, or when you think you've nutmegged him and got past him and suddenly he's back and he's creating a chance at the other end, again, similar to the Thierry Henry thing, you must be looking around thinking, well, what am I supposed to do here?
Well, exactly. That's what you do think. So, I mean, there's a lot of banter that goes on football pitches. Robbie Savage used to be one of the best for it, at sort of hammering another player and trying to get in their head to make them second guess their own ability. So footballers will do that all the time. So if you have a bad touch and then the next time there's a break in play, Sav used to say things like, "Mate, how are you on 20 grand a week when you can't even trap that ball? You can't even trap a bag of sand." And you could see him trying to work in the other players' minds to try and put them off their game. So that happens all the time. What you have to do, my advice for any youngsters listening, if someone does that, you have to remember back to the Muzzy Izzet times when he's telling you you're a good player, the Neil Lennon times when he's telling you a good player, the Gary Parker putting you in the first team, just to reinforce the fact that you are a good player and that this guy's just trying to banter you or whoever it is who's in front of you.
What was the best partnership that you had on your pitch then at Leicester City? So, I don't know, it's quite a difficult one as a winger. Maybe it's your fellow fullback or one of the strikers that you used to feed, maybe?
Yeah, I actually put down, I obviously didn't understand the question properly, I actually put down Izzet and Lennon, because them two complemented each other, unbelievable. But if it was something, if it was the partnership that I had a brilliant partnership with Gary Rowett, who played at right back. He really served me well, because especially for someone like me, who was quick, but if I had just gone on a run, you wanted your right back to be able to say, just stay there and get your breath back. I'll look after, you know, the left winger, whoever it was. And Gary Rowett used to do that all the time. But probably the best partnership would be myself and Brian Dean, just because I knew that if I got to the byline and put it anywhere, hung a cross up, it didn't matter if it was flat trajectory, high trajectory, I knew that he would make it look like a good cross just because he was really good in the air. We seemed to have sort of, I know it sounds cheesy, but seemed to have sort of the telepathy. If I was going to spin it into the near post, he sort of knew to run in that direction, and he always made my crossing look decent, because at times it wasn't.
Well, come on and talk about Brian Dean when you pick your teammates 11. But what was he like then as a person off the pitch? Because of everything he'd achieved in the game, what was he like to be alongside him in the dressing room?
Probably alongside Muzzy, probably the most important for me. Brian Dean was, he had won the title with Leeds, obviously, years before when I was a kid. He'd played under lots of different managers. He had been through academy systems. He had played so many games in the top flight. But he was someone who I could really relate to, because he sort of came through a similar background to me. And what he was brilliant at is connecting with the youngsters. So when he first came into Leicester, a lot of the first teamers hang around with the first teamers. And he was a lot older than myself, Jordan Stewart, Matt Heath, John Stevenson, Martin Reeves. But we really needed more characters at that time to sort of notice us, if you know what I mean. And he did that. And he would give us advice. And he would sit with us and talk with us. And, you know, if we'd been out the night before and we probably shouldn't have done it, he would talk to us about that, why it would be detrimental, not just for your health, but for what, you know, the manager or other players might think of you, if you're the type that's a party boy, or if you're dedicated to trying to become the best of yourself. So he really, really gave us a lot when when we were coming through at that time. So he would probably be the most influential out of all the older players at Leicester. And I've just done my book at the minute, and he writes the foreword in my book. I asked him if he would write it because we've stayed friends over the years, like I have with a lot of the former players. I'm very close to Muzzy still, Walshy, Elliot, Tags. But probably Brian Dean is one of my closest allies just because he gave me so much when I was a youngster. I've stayed so close to him.
I guess your careers as well will always be in a way intrinsically linked, because you got the last ever goal at Filbert Street. He then got the first one at the Walker Stadium. So in a way, there's a little bit of a connection there.
Yeah, there is. He also scored the first Premier League goal ever.
Yeah.
Which is a massive accolade to have. But it was funny because I sort of did a podcast recently, and we were talking about who scored the first goal at the Walker Stadium. And the first official goal in a league match was obviously Brian Dean, but the first goal in a pre-season friendly against Bilbao, what we played in, was Jordan Stewart, who scored the goal from my cross. So I'm sort of linked to them both in a way, and it was funny to hear them two argue about who has the official title of scoring the first goal.
Well, if you're claiming Jordan Stewart's, then all those who scored in those charity games might claim the last Filbert Street goal. That's your problem, Pipes.
It is. That's why I say it's Brian Dean, without a doubt.
Okay, let's go on to your teammates' 11 now. So those of you new to this podcast, this is the best 11 players that Pipes played with during his career. A minimum of 5 of those have to be from his time at Leicester City. So before we get into it, Pipes, what's your formation?
The formation is 4-4-2.
Okay, great. Traditionalist, I like it. We'll start with the goalkeeper then. This was from your time at Sunderland. You've picked Thomas Sorensen.
Yeah, I've picked Thomas Sorensen. First of all, he was an unbelievable goalkeeper. But as I say, I've only played 50 or so games, I think, in first team football at Sunderland and Leicester combined, and Mansfield. And I played with the likes of Tim Flowers, Casey Keller, Ian Walker at Leicester, Sorensen and Meyer at Sunderland. But I've gone for Sorensen just because, I don't know, they're all great goalkeepers. It's such a difficult one, but Sorensen, he was such a man mountain. And any time anyone was through on goal, I remember I played against Sunderland Newcastle, and Alan Shearer was through on goal. And I truly believed that, you know, Alan Shearer is the most prolific Premier League goal scorer of all time. And I truly believed that Sorensen would save it. As he's running through. So he just instilled that belief in his teammates. So in the end, that's why I went for him.
Yep, then your back four is a Leicester City back four, isn't it? So we'll start with the fullbacks. You've got Frank Sinclair one side and the man you just mentioned there, Jordan Stewart at left back.
Yeah, I put him at left back. Jordan can play higher in the pitch because he's got so many skills as well. But we sort of got in and around the first team at the same time. He was quick, he was aggressive, he was a great character, a great lad. He was sort of one of them that he was an honour to play with. He had a really lengthy career, so I wanted to pay homage to him by putting him in my 11, so I put him at left back. And Sinclair, not really a right back, more of a centre back, but obviously when we get onto the centre backs, you'll know why I had to try and shoehorn Frank in, because the other two are legends. But Frankie was another one of them guys that looked after the youngsters coming through, but also I think at times didn't get the credit of what a good footballer he was. He scored a few own goals, so that sort of haunted him, but he was a brilliant, brilliant footballer, and every time he played right back, he never let anyone down.
Yeah, you mentioned the two legends in central defence, obviously very well known to us at the club, Matt Elliott and Gerry Taggart.
Yeah, just I always look at players that I would put in my 11. Who wouldn't you want to play against? And any time I played as a striker, I definitely wouldn't have wanted to play against either of Elliot or Taggart. You know, Taggart growling at people and sort of grabbing them by the scruff of the neck, scaring the out of them, to be honest. So I would not have wanted to play against him. But also great with the ball at his feet. both of these two guys probably didn't get the credit for that. Really good at playing out. They would have been two centre-backs that would have fit into a system now. Even a Brendan Rodgers system where he wants his centre-backs to play out from the back. They're aggressive, strong, hard to beat, but then can also play with the ball at the feet.
Into midfield then. We're going to save the left midfielder here. We'll start on the right-hand side. Jason McAteer, one of your Sunderland teammates.
Yeah. McAteer, again, all these, you know, when I pick 11s, I don't just pick, I know I'm supposed to, I don't just pick footballing ability, I pick characters, what they were like as human beings, because I feel that's just as important. And McAteer was a great lad, so funny, but also a tremendous footballer. And when I was sort of in awe of him a bit when I got to Sunderland, because they had signed me to play as the right winger. And I'd been growing up watching Match of the Day for years, watching McAteer at Liverpool. He wasn't the quickest, but he was different for me. His passing array and his crossing was outstanding. That's why I put him in the team.
Yeah, what was he like then as a person? You said he was funny and he was warm, but in the dressing room, with all that he's achieved in the game, and as you said, he had this fantastic career before going to Sunderland. So what was it like having someone like that in the dressing room?
Well, I had so many. When I signed for Sunderland, it was sort of, you know, it was littered with Kevin Phillips, Niall Quinn, Phil Babb, Jason McAteer, Thomas Sorensen, Mickey Gray. There was just legends of the game, to be honest. And McAteer was so down to earth. And his nickname is actually Trigger. So he's still in my phone now as Trigger from Only Fools and Horses, because he's quite thick. If I can say that. He's not the brightest Jason McAteer. And, you know, that old joke, people use it as a general joke now, but he meant it for serious. We went Frankie and Benny's one night for something to eat, and the waitress came over and she said, "Do you want your pizza cutting in 8 slices or 4? And he said, "Oh, 4. I could never manage 8. And we were all laughing, thinking that he's just done that banter with the waitress. But he was deadly serious, and we sat there for 20 minutes trying to explain to him why it's the same thing. But he just couldn't get it, so his nickname was Trigger, but he's just a great lad.
Yeah, that's a great story, that. The central midfielders, we've already talked about Muzzy, is it? The other one, Claudio Reyna, from your time at Sunderland. And then the left midfielder, the reason I wanted to save this, and my grandpa is a big Sunderland fan, I'll give him a shout out. His favourite player from recent times, certainly at Sunderland, is Julio Arca.
Yeah, well, with Julio, I knew very quickly that I was playing with a legend. I really did. I mean, his name's not that big. So when a lot of people ask me, who are the best players you've played with? I always mention Julio's name, and I always mention Muzzy Izzet's name. Now, a lot of people know about Muzzy and have seen him, but I don't know what it is about Julio. And a lot of he does not get the credit, like throughout the Premier League, of what a good player he was. Literally could do anything with the ball at his feet. Great passer, great crosser. Once again, great lad. There's no one in this team that's not a great lad. And he should have gone on to play. I don't know if he got any international caps for Argentina, but he should have done. He was that good.
Yeah, he never did quite get the cap for Argentina. He 12 under-20 appearances, 1 under-21 appearance, but in the Premier League, very much a cult figure at both Sunderland and then obviously at Middlesbrough, where he went on to play after.
Yeah, honestly, terrific player. One of them where you could just sit in training and just watch him all day, like I used to do with Muzzy, is it? And there's not many players throughout my career that I sort of did that with. John Oster was another one. It was an unbelievable talent, especially in training, but he never really transferred it to games when he was sort of under pressure. But Julio definitely did, and so did Muzzy.
And he was a bit of a free kick specialist as well, wasn't he?
He literally could do anything. Him and Muzzy are the best two players I've played with. And don't forget, I played under... I didn't actually play, but I was in some under-21 squads as well. I played some friendlies. I played with Jermaine Jenas, Defoe, Gareth Barry... Wayne Rooney trained with us on a couple of occasions, but I still put them two as the best two players that I ever played with.
And then your two strikers, one of them, we've already talked about, Brian Dean, fantastic career and obviously did really well during his time at Leicester. The other one is someone that eventually played for Leicester, but you were his teammate when he was at Sunderland. And I'm just trying to think now, you obviously will have been there just after this incredible season that he had at Sunderland, being the Golden Boot winner, of course, it's Kevin Phillips.
Yeah, well, as we've seen with Jamie Vardy this season, there's only special talents win the Golden Boot, as is Jamie Vardy, as is Kevin Phillips. And at that time, so I always go back to training because that's when you see the true quality of a player, and then it's whether they have the mentality to be able to transmute that quality in high pressurized situations like match day. And Kevin Phillips could definitely do that. But when I used to watch him in training, it used to be at kind of crazy kind of angles in training, and he used to be shaping to shoot, and you used to always think to yourself, what is he doing shooting from there? He's never going to score. And it would fly in. It would fly in the far top corner. It'd knock it in off a post. It'd smash it past the goalkeeper from a ridiculous angle. And you used to think, wow, I'm honoured to be able to play with a guy that is operating at this kind of level. And it was a toss-up between Dean and Niall Quinn, because Niall Quinn is also a legend in the game. And obviously, at the time I signed for Sunderland, was Kevin Phillips' strike partner. But Dean and Quinn, very similar. Dean just edged it because when I played with him, he was a little younger and were offered more of a threat when I was putting my crosses in the box.
Well, what a fantastic teammates 11 that is. I'll just quickly run through it now. So Thomas Sorensen in goal. The back four of Frank Sinclair, Matt Elliott, Jerry Taggart and Jordan Stewart. With a midfield of Jason McAteer, Muzzy is it, Claudio Reyna and Julio Arca, with Brian Dean and Kevin Phillips up front. All of those players in their prime pipes would take some beating as a Premier League 11, that's for sure. The final question that we ask on Inside the Dressing Room is what was your favourite night out or trip away as a group of Leicester City players?
Oh, this is going to be a little controversial, okay. I think, just because it was a pre-season tour we had to Finland. So if I give you that information first, then you may or may not know what's coming. But that was, I think it was 18, 19. I was in and around the first team, and we went away to Finland, and it was the first time you really felt a belonging to the group and that you was a first team member. So it was huge, especially for the young lads that went on it. We stayed up late at night. We had a few beers when the manager let us go out with the first team lads, and they really accepted us as young players in and around the first team that were now sort of accepted as first team players. So in that regard, it was my favourite trip because, you know, you're socialising with the lads. We'd go out and eat. We'd have a few beers. We'd have some brilliant training sessions. We'd have banter. I was a part of the card school that was going on. So you really felt a sense of belonging. And that was the first time that happened. So for me, that's why it was my, you know, favourite trip. For the negative side, it was also the trip when it was the Dennis Wise, Callum Davidson incident that sort of marred the trip, really, because it was such a great trip for everyone. But yeah, that sort of ruined it towards the end. But that is without doubt my favourite trip.
This was an LCFC radio production of Inside the Dressing Room. To hear more episodes with former Leicester City players, please subscribe to our podcast from all your usual podcast providers. Thank you for listening, and if you enjoyed it, share the podcast with your friends, family, and fellow members of the Blue Army who might enjoy it too.